Okay, so we've been talking about mitzvos from different perspectives. And today we have one short chapter. It's called Mitzvah Achas. You see in front of you, it's the sixth chapter here in Rav Volbi's Alishor in the second gate. And maybe the way to preface this chapter, to appreciate it, is to think about a mashal, an analogy, as we often do. This mashal might only work for people in a particular age bracket. Some of you are familiar, you remember something called a Game Boy. You remember that? Let's close the door, Jenny, just when you have a chance. Thank you. So that was that rectangular small box that Nintendo created. And the first, it was a thing. I'll explain it. And the first, maybe some of us, our children had it, maybe grandchildren. So the first game, what was the first game that came out with Tetris was the first game. And then they came out with Super Mario Brothers. And the Super Mario Brothers has become a phenomenon. So it still exists today in various forms in the new iterations of these gaming consoles, which are much more sophisticated than what we had, which were these simple black and white gray boxes. So I reflect on this Super Mario game, which I wasn't ever particularly good at, but my wife, on the other hand, was very good at, as she describes, and I have actually seen her play this game when we found my old Game Boy many years later, or hers, whoever it was. So the reason why we bring this up is because different people look at the world in different ways. Sometimes you'll read stories or perspectives, especially in Bali Musar, in heavy ethical perspectives, where they describe the world as a minefield, as a battlefield. I recently came across a book from a noted author, and the image on the front cover of this book, which is, I think, an ethical development type of book, was chess pieces in battle. They had, like, arms and things like that. That is one way to view the world, and there's no question that the world that we live in, especially today, but in every time period in its own way, has challenges, has pitfalls, and has dangers. But there's another way to look at the world, and that's not to view it really as a battlefield exclusively, that's what you think of when you think of Olam Hazeh, this world. It's to view it as a Super Mario Brothers game. Because in this game, there are two aspects to it. You have a little character with a mustache and a red, and that, in those days it was black and white, a little stumpy character who runs along the board, and then the game, the console, you see the game shifting along the board, and the buttons A and B, you jump to get over whatever various obstacles are coming along in this obstacle course. So there were flying turtle shells that could be dangerous. There are prickly, I don't remember all the details of it, there were prickly cacti. There were little sewer pipes. Some of those were good things. You go into the sewer pipe, it's good. And some of them were bad, and some of them were holes in the ground. You know what I'm talking about. So it's true that those things are in there, but there were many other things in the game. And the point of the game is not really primarily to avoid falling into the cacti. If you go into the game, you would find there were flowers, and that if you can make the character jump and bump into the flowers, so then you would somehow imbibe the quality of that flower. Now you picked up some koach, whatever that particular koach was. Or, most notably, there were, let's say, imagine a layer of bricks. Well, one of those bricks had coins inside of them. And if you stand underneath it, and you press the button, and you jump, and you bump into that block, so then a coin comes out and it goes into your bank account. So the purpose really is to accrue points and various flowers and other things throughout the game. That's the whole point of the Super Mario game. I think that's another way to look at this world. It's not to only see a disastrous minefield out there, Because if that's the way you look at the world, then you're going to cultivate a particular attitude and a feeling about the world around us, which works for some people. But there's another way to look at it, and that says that, yes, there are many pitfalls, there are many areas of concern, but there are also many opportunities, whether those are flowers or coins. And those opportunities take a lot of different forms and shapes. And one of them, one of those things that when you tap into it, you enrich your life, is a mitzvah. So the world is filled with lots of challenges, but it's filled with lots of opportunities. And many of those opportunities are mitzvah opportunities. And sometimes, even one is hugely significant. Right? It doesn't have to be that it's all or nothing, that you chop every single mitzvah opportunity that's out there. Even one, sometimes one coin could help you arrive at the next level to protect you against whatever, I forget the name of the nefarious character that's, I don't remember what his name is. Bowser, I think, was the bad guy. No? I don't remember. I don't remember either. Yeah. I think she's in the middle of patience. I don't think I should do that. But that's another way to look at the world. It's not only looking at the world as a minefield, it's looking at it as a balance, a nuanced balance between challenges and opportunities. So now, Rav Volpe talks about mitzvos in this context, and when you look at them like this, you can gain a whole new appreciation for our life. So he starts in this section, as you'll see, it's broken down by paragraph, and he talks about a different dimension of mitzvos. The first dimension, halacha psukahi, on the top line, it is a firmly resolved halacha, which, by the way, is a huge controversy, and it's not so simple. But let's assume for the moment there is one strongly held opinion. Mitzvos tzrichos kavana. Mitzvos, those actions that we perform in the fulfillment of the will of Hashem, hainu, they require intent. Hainu sheyechavein, that the person should intend, lekayim bezeh, to fulfill with this, kasher tziva Hashem, that which Hashem commanded him. V'chol mitzvah u'mitzvah hamizdamenes lefnei Adam, third line now, dorana. Dorana is Aramaic for matana. What is a matana? That's right, it's a gift. Each one of these is a gift from Hashem. Hu deshader lei kutcha brichu, and he quotes this from the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, ha'arizal gila le'ish sodo. And this is why the mashal is important. The Arizal, the Ari HaKadosh, he lived in Tzfat in the 16th century, and he revealed many of the secrets of mysticism. Shekol ma shehisig, shenivtichu lo shari hachmachma v'ruach HaKodesh, all that he accomplished in the wisdom and the spirituality that he, the Ari HaKadosh, who was a giant of giants, everything that he got, bischar shahaya sameach, ba'asiyas kol mitzvah, simcha gedola la'in tachlis. He said it wasn't the performance of mitzvahs that opened up his connection to godliness. It was the joy that accompanied it. It was the way in which he performed the mitzvah. And if we view every mitzvah as one of those coins, as one of those flowers in the Super Mario Brothers game, you ever watch a kid play these games? They become, in many instances, so immersed, it's a little bit unnerving sometimes. It's like you have to get a grip. You watch the kids, and they're playing this video game, and when they get that one flower that they've been waiting for, because it's going to fit into their whole configuration of all the little tchotchkes that they need as part of the game, which you have to remind them afterwards, it's just a game. They're the happiest you could ever imagine, right? That there's nothing greater than when that kid gets that purple flower, it's like, yes, everyone's going crazy and nuts. Says the Arizal, that's a way to view mitzvos. Especially the rare ones, the ones that don't come along all the time. There's an extra enthusiasm, you could argue. And he says that the great accomplishment in his life is from that happiness. Simcha zu eina chitzonis, Elo his bonanus B'matnas ha-mitzvah v'godol ha-mitzvah ba. It's not an external joy, and in this he actually goes much deeper than the mashal, than the example of the Super Mario Brothers. Because in the Super Mario Brothers, the reason why we're so happy when we get that flower is because we've put something in our pocket. We've accomplished something and we've gained something. He says here, actually, it's much deeper than that. It's not just that we've put a spiritual accomplishment in our pocket that we're going to take with us and no one can ever take away from us. It's that we've reached down into a deeper part of ourselves and connected to Hashem, which is something we've spoken about previously about the nature of mitzvahs. So it's not just that you put a mitzvah coin in your pocket, which is hugely important, but it's that now we have a deeper connection and a greatness in our lives, something that we have accomplished. So there is a dimension of mitzvah that has simcha to it, and that simcha emanates from just doing the right thing. So you can have somebody who does a mitzvah, and they do it, they check the box. But then you can have somebody who does a mitzvah and they do it with so much enthusiasm. It's a totally different kind of mitzvah. And that enthusiasm comes from the love of what they're doing. Years ago, someone got me a book. It's a very short book. You can read it in less than an hour. It's called The Fred Factor. Awesome book. Now there's a 2.0. The Fred Factor is about a mailman in Denver, Colorado. Great book. Awesome book. What's the premise of this book? I don't know what it's like today, because in our house, usually I don't see the mail carrier. And then oftentimes when you see the mail carrier during Shabbos lunch, it's not the same mail carrier. But apparently, in certain places, or a mall, as they say in Yiddish, a long time ago, you had your mail carrier. Today, I don't think it's like that. I don't know what it's like in, what's it like in Lincolnwood? Do they have the same? You know your mail carrier. So, one day, the guy who wrote this book, his name is Mark Sanborn. He's a motivational speaker. So, he writes this book and he describes how one day he met his mail carrier for the first time. His name is Fred. And Fred said to him, "What do you do?" And he was already taken aback because usually he doesn't have lengthy conversations with his mail carrier. And so he starts describing that he's a motivational speaker, and the mail carrier asks him a little bit about what that's like, and he describes it, blah, blah, blah. So finally he says, "You know," Fred says to him, "if you're a motivational speaker, it must be that you travel a lot." He says, "Yeah, you know, I do travel a lot." So the mail carrier says to him, "You know, if you'd like, you can let me know, and when you're traveling, I can hold on to your mail, and if there are any other packages that I see at your door, I can put them aside for you." So he's already thinking that's kind of unusual. Most mail carriers don't worry about what DHL is leaving at your doorstep. And he describes how this whole relationship was forged between himself and the mailman, because the mailman, in the performance of his regular duties, added value because how he loved serving his customers. And after this book was published, he became a whole mail sensation, like a rock star mailman, and he was recognized by the post office, and like a whole... So now he has a second book that someone gave me, which I haven't read yet. But the idea is that you could do the same thing as somebody else. You could perform the same mitzvah, you can light the same Shabbos candles, you can give the same tzedakah, but if you do it with enthusiasm, it's a totally different experience. And for us, if we view that mitzvah as an opportunity, as tzavza, to connect to Hashem Yisparach, each one of those is a great joy. And there it's going to be reflected in the way that you perform the mitzvah. Next one. Amal ha-mitzvah. The hard work that we invest in the mitzvah. Mechayev diktuk rav. It requires great attention. Working hard for the mitzvah and being attentive. Kedei lizkos to merit letzuras ha-mitzvah kefi ha-halacha. To fulfill the accomplishment of the mitzvah according to the halacha. One of the things that scares me, if you were to envision, if you were an intense Baal Musar, you would look at it this way, and it's a scary thought. You know, imagine every time you perform a mitzvah, you perform a mitzvah with your actions, and the result of that is that you have created a malach, one angel, to stand on your behalf. So after 120 years, I'm going to come, I have all my mitzvahs, So I'm expecting an army full of angels. They're all going to be put together, well kempt, and, you know, fully ready to defend me against all the other things that are going to come my way after 120 years. And I look at this phalanx of angels, and I see two of them are crippled, and three of them have no arms, and one of them has no eye, and the other ones are walking backwards, and they're like totally deranged minions, you know? And I say to myself, for God's sake, why do my mitzvah angels look like deranged minions? And someone pulls me aside, well, each mitzvah is going to be expressed in the angel to the extent that you perform that mitzvah. So if you perform that mitzvah half you know what, and with no intention, and pathetic, so then your angel is going to look like a pathetic nothing. So that's a scary thought. I wouldn't recommend thinking about that before you go to sleep. But the idea that we want to do the mitzvos kefi ha'alacha, according to the proper way, it's not going to stem from, again, it could, if you like that kind of mashal, if that's the way you eat your cornflakes in the morning, go with that mashal. But for a lot of us, we're going to put that in the Musar box for like the afternoon of Yom Kippur for 5 minutes before Ne'ilah, and then close it. Because we can look at it a totally different way. We can look at it as Lizkos Litzuras HaMitzvah. We want to get that to that connection to the fullest extent. And therefore, says Rav Volbi, HaMachapes Kula Ba'asiyas Mitzvah Simenu Kiterem Kivel Alatzmo Ola Mitzvos. Sometimes, some of us, we're not so in love with the mitzvah, so you know what we do? We look for leniencies. We look for ways to get out of the mitzvah. And everybody can think about that in their own life, in their own way. We all do this in different ways. I shouldn't say we all. I can only speak for myself. There are many righteous people in this room. We probably never look for any coolers, any leniencies. But sometimes we do look for leniencies. Sometimes those leniencies are a good thing to look for. They're important. Even, I would say, they're sometimes necessary. So sometimes, I'll give you an example of a shortcut that's necessary, a prusbul. Hillel, the sages of the Talmud, they instituted and enforced something called a prusbul, which is a document that says, at the end of 7 years, at the end of 6 years, for the seventh year, at the end of the seventh year, which is the way we paskin, all the debts are nullified between people. So they made a document that said, I could take my loan and give it to a rabbinic court and they'll enforce it, even though from my standpoint, I would have gotten rid of it. So you'd say, that's a big time leniency, right? You're circumventing the whole principle of Shemitah's Ksafim. Yeah, but the rabbi said, it serves a greater religious purpose. It brings us actually closer to Hashem, because otherwise, you know what would happen toward the end of the fifth and the sixth years in the economy? There would be a credit freeze. Nobody would want to lend money. And you know who would be the biggest, I would say, the people who would be hurt most directly? Who would that be? Not the big corporations, because they could probably weather that storm, even though they would want to get the loans. But who are going to be the most affected? The payday loan people. The people who have paycheck to paycheck, who are asking for payday loans, they're going to be the most affected. So the rabbi said, you know, we're going to find a leniency. But that's not a leniency. That's a leniency so that we could fulfill the mitzvah to a greater extent, to the mitzvah of loaning money to people who need it. So it's not to say that all leniencies are bad. Sometimes leniencies are good, and they're important. But at the same time, if the purpose of the leniency is because, you know, we really want to avoid this mitzvah like the plague, I'd rather not do this mitzvah, then that says something about our relationship to the mitzvah. That's all. It's just the reality. And we should be honest about that with ourselves. What's our relationship to the mitzvah? And so, how are we going to relate to it? Me'ikari ha-mitzvos halohu, from the main thing of mitzvos, l'rachek shvirus leiv v'lichyos l'fi sidrei ha-chaim shekav alaru borei olam. One of the main purposes of mitzvos is to get us into the frame of mind and the thought and the approach to fulfilling mitzvos, and that leads us to leading a spiritual life. Harotze Lichyos, somebody who wants to live, bishrirus libo, wantonly, beheter haTorah bechipus kulos, by always looking to collect all of the leniencies that are out there, terem yodea mahi Torah, does not really know what a Torah life is like. You can find, especially today with Google, you can find kulas leniencies for everything. You can go around collecting every kula in the book and avoid fulfilling basically anything. You can find it. It's out there. Whether that's a legitimate kula or not, that's a separate conversation. But you can troll around and find every leniency. But then Rav Volpe asks us to consider, well, then what is Torah to us? It's just a burden that we're trying to avoid at every cost. At any cost, we'll find every leniency. As opposed to saying, no, I understand this is a system. It's a system that brings us to a spiritual plane, which obviously on one level is earning our keep in the next world. It's refining us spiritually on our soul level, but also guides us how to lead a proper life in this world. So that system sometimes has challenges. When a person, God forbid, has somebody who's in the hospital, in their family, and they want to just get in the car and drive there, but there really isn't a justification for them to drive there. That's a hard thing. That's a hard system to be born into. It's not an easy thing. But that's part of the system of mitzvahs, to understand what the experience of Shabbos is. So for that end, there are a whole host of ways of navigating that. Sometimes a person is in a certain sense where they take a taxi to the hospital if it's necessary. Sometimes, you know, the halacha has a whole way of dealing with these, but sometimes it's very difficult. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine, his mother-in-law passed away right before Pesach, and they buried her on Erev Pesach in the middle of the day. So that means their shiva was a grand total of 7 minutes. That's a very hard thing, to have a shiva for a grand total of 7 minutes. It's very difficult. So it doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't walk out of here saying this kind of fanciful perspective, like, mitzvah observance it's always like eating cotton candy. It's not always like eating cotton candy. It's not always easy. It requires a lot of sacrifice. But that sacrifice comes from a place of meaning, a place of purpose. So when we drill down to that, we can find that simcha and that amelos and that embracing of the mitzvos. It doesn't mean that we never find a kula. Sometimes it's important. Sometimes finding a kula in one area, a leniency, is because you want to pursue a more noble religious pursuit in a different area. But we need to be honest with ourselves. What is our relationship with mitzvos? Does it reflect simcha? Does it reflect a whole commitment that we want to fulfill it because we view that it's value added? Or is it just, you know, something that we have to check off, so we're going to avoid it at any cost? And if we can find some leniency not to observe it, we're going to. However, at the same time, says Rav Volpe, ulam, third paragraph, gam lahachmer al atzmo b'masha lo nifsak lahalacha, rashai rak adam gadol b'torah. So we say mitzvahs are awesome, they're great, we're going to embrace them, we think that they enhance our lives, so we're going to be very punctilious about them. Well, does that mean we're going to take on every stringency? We just spoke about our attitude to leniencies. Well, what about stringencies? Are we going to go around collecting every stringency and every chumrah, every added level of observance? Says Rav Volpe, not so fast either. It has to be balanced. He says, only a great person, Adam Gadol B'Torah, is somebody who should observe all of the various chumras that you could find out there. Just like we don't shop for kulas, we also don't shop for chumras. Only a person who's on that level, that they are worrying about the last crossing of every T, and not just crossing the T, the dot of the T, that it should be straight. He says, Adam Katan, a small person, a regular person like me or you, I shouldn't speak for anybody else, but like me, Hamachapes Chumros, who's always looking for stringencies, O Yurahu, or it is, Yurah literally means arrogance, or it's Mechzika Yurah. Rav Shechtet, my Rebbe from YU, once told a story that one of the boys came to him and asked him about wearing tefillin during the day or something like that, which, as you know, is not a common practice. We generally wear tefillin only during davening. In previous generations, many years ago, many centuries ago, people would wear tefillin all day if they were very, very pious. In Volozhin, Rav Kook wore tefillin all day. He was the only student at the time in Volozhin who wore tefillin all day. So Rav Shechter said, let me tell you a story, he told us, that he told this student. He said a guy once came to his Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, is such and such a practice, mechzi ki yuara? Does that look like arrogance? The Rebbe said, no, it doesn't look like arrogance. It's yuara mamish. It's actual arrogance. So Shechter told it to the students. And he told us later, apparently the student didn't get the joke because the next day he saw him wearing tefillin. So we have to understand there's also such a thing called yuara, which is totally out of place. You have somebody who doesn't observe certain parts of mitzvahs because he's on a journey, and in another part of mitzvahs he observes them in such an exaggerated fashion that you say that's totally out of place. It doesn't make any sense. A person's mitzvah observance, as Rav Shechter told us many times, needs to be balanced. He told us about the homily. The Torah says that a Kohen who serves in the Beis HaMikdash unfortunately cannot be a sarua. A sarua means he can't have one appendage. Let's say, God forbid, he has one arm very long and one arm that's very short. So that person cannot serve as the Kohen Ha'ovid in the Beis HaMikdash because he's called a Balmum. He has other roles, but he can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Shechter said that that's true not just for the way that a Kohen looks, but we are Mamleches Kohanim, we are all Kohanim. We all serve in Hashem's army, so to speak. So we all have to be balanced. If a person's observance of the laws of Shabbos are deficient, and then their observance of the laws of Kashrus are so scrupulous that they're not in consonance. They look for every chumra in one place and they don't observe in another place. He says, that's out of balance. That's out of whack. We need to find a proper balance that we love mitzvot, we're going to do them properly. We're not going to look for every kula, but we're going to make sure that the chumras that we take on, the punctilious observances, fit within our holistic personality. He says, sometimes, gam chipus chumros novea mishrius alev. Also, looking for too many chumras, too many stringencies, comes from an unhealthy heart. As he quotes, if he is an Adam Pashut, if he is a simple person. So we, on our level, for most of us, are simple people. And our job is to view mitzvos and to view the world like the Super Mario. We need to understand that there are pitfalls, but then that there are mitzvos which are a great opportunity. And therefore, if we see them as an important opportunity, we're going to, number one, do them with simcha, with joy. Number two, we're going to be careful about them. And number three, we're going to think carefully about how kulas and chumras fit into our mitzvah observance. Because if we're always running after leniencies and shortcuts, doesn't that say something about our mitzvahs and our relationship to our mitzvahs? And at the same time, it might seem that it's coming from a good place, but we also need to check to make sure that when we find those added chumras, which is part of the reason why it's so important to be educated, so that we know what is the main halacha and what is just the chumra, right? Nobody would tell you that not eating at McDonald's is a chumra. That's not a chumra. That's a din. So we have to know how to prioritize our growth between the din and the chumra, the main institution and the added bonus. There's one opinion from the 13th century that no one ever heard of, that's a chumra. But even that, we have to make sure that it fits into our holistic perspective on mitzvahs. Because sometimes, he says, even chumras can be totally out of place. Imagine you see somebody walking in the street, they're wearing pajamas and a bow tie and a top hat. You'd say, that's ludicrous. You don't wear a bow tie and a top hat if you're wearing pajamas. If you're wearing pajamas, you wear sweatpants and a ski cap. So all of these things, it's not to say that our love of mitzvos means that we shouldn't be balanced. We should be balanced in the context of an appreciation and a love for mitzvos. So Mirtz Hashem, we'll finish the rest of this next piece next week. Have a great day. Thanks for coming.